I'm Laura Harper Lake.
And I'm Sarah Reitzman, and you're listening to Creative Guts.
Hey, listeners, and welcome back to the Creative Guts podcast. Today, we're talking about art more broadly, why art is important to our communities and to our economy, and how we can ensure our communities embrace and support public art, which is very important.
We're going to talk with Will Stewart, who is the executive director of a statewide nonprofit, Stay Work Play New Hampshire. The mission of Stay Work Play is to attract and retain young people to the state of New Hampshire, and Will is going to talk about the value of public art to our young people and cultural amenities. Creative Guts, of course, the podcast, is born in the great state of New Hampshire, where Laura and I both live, and Stay Work Play is working to ensure that art is at the forefront of our state and our state's economy.
Yes, which we appreciate it because it's a great place to live, and it's awesome to see people that are continuously trying to make it better and enriching.
Yeah.
We hope you enjoy this episode, and after the episode, you'll get all the information on how to look up all the cool things they're doing.
My name is Will Stewart. I'm the executive director of Stay Work Play New Hampshire, which is a 501c3 nonprofit whose aim is to attract and retain more young people in New Hampshire.
Like us.
Yeah.
Like you. You're here. We're around, and we've existed for about 10 years. And the reason we exist, and you know, why do we want to attract, you know, and retain more young people in New Hampshire? For a few reasons. One, New Hampshire is the second oldest state in the country right now, second only to Maine. In fact, we are
not Florida.
We are older even than Florida.
Wow.
Believe it or not.
That's really surprising, actually.
Yeah. They get a lot of international migration, so that accounts for some of the more youthful numbers.
Balances it out, yeah.
Correct. We have some here in New Hampshire, of course, but not nearly as much from like Latin America, for example, in Florida. So not only are we the second oldest state in the country, we actually also have the lowest unemployment rate at present at 2.4%. And that, combined with the fact that New Hampshire is the leading exporter of college-going students. So 61% of high school students in New Hampshire who want a four-year degree leave the state to go pursue that degree. Now, some of them come back, but a lot of them don't. So what this equals in the end is a severe workforce shortage that we have at present and is just anticipated to grow unless things change. Today, there are more than 20,000 open jobs in New Hampshire. So to say that our organizations and employers are screaming for people is an understatement.
Mm. Yep.
So that's why Stay Work Play exists. Again, to attract and retain more young people to help ultimately to help our economy and to keep us this great state that we are.
Do you have any insight on what the range of those jobs is? Are we talking like all the way from dishwashers and restaurants to, you know, people making a good chunk of change and educated needs for college educated professionals?
It really does run the spectrum. Yeah. And it's, you know, here in New Hampshire, tourism, of course, is our number two economic driver. So it's everything from, you know, the seasonal jobs at a lot of our, you know, resorts, you know, on the mountains in the wintertime and the lakes and the seacoast in the summer, you know, all the way up to, you know, advanced manufacturing and in more traditional white collar jobs that you might think of in that realm as well.
Tell us about the survey.
Sure. So, you know, Stay Work Play, we're a statewide organization, but we're a pretty small organization. We have three full-time staff and a budget of about $200,000. To say that we are under-resourced for the task that we face is an understatement. So our board of directors realized a couple of years ago that, you know, if we're going to really make an impact, that we need to be very focused and very precise in, you know, how we utilize the few resources that we do have. And so we recognized to do that, we needed data. And so we commissioned a survey with one of our financial partners, Eversource, and commissioned actually a Seacoast-based research firm to survey young people in New Hampshire. And when I say young people, 20 to 40, you know, was the age range that we had surveyed, and really trying to get data on the factors that young people take into consideration when making the decision to stay in or leave New Hampshire. And then, you know, with that data, you know, can really help us kind of focus our efforts moving forward.
Did you take that survey?
No, I did not.
I don't think so.
It was randomly administered, so it's not like something that we could have shared or your friend could have shared online, which you know, which the pollsters tell us, and I'm not a data guy, but our data people say that you know, having it random like that you know, makes the results more reliable.
Yeah.
It's not just
self-selected
people.
Play.
Correct. And we do have a lot of friends, and they would have taken the survey had we asked, but we wanted, you know, unbiased, unskewed results.
I never get randomly selected. It's like jury duty. I never get picked.
I got picked once, but then I had just moved out of the county, so then I wasn't eligible anymore to serve in that county. I was like, okay.
My mom's like 66 years old. She still gripes that she's never gotten picked for jury duty in her entire life.
I'm offended.
Yeah. I have a theory that if you want to do jury duty, you're never going to get picked. And if you don't want to do it, then like you're first up.
Yeah. Like the person who hates cats, that's the one that the cat always goes to.
Yeah, yes. Exactly.
Yep.
Yeah. Exactly.
That's true.
Yeah. Court system, just like cats.
Yep.
So tell us what you found in that survey. What are the main reasons why people would leave New Hampshire?
Sure. So we heard, I would say, a lot of the results that we got were not unexpected. One big surprise, but you know, a lot of the things that we hear about, first and foremost, jobs, people said. There weren't enough jobs, they said, to advance the job. There weren't enough jobs that they wanted, I should say, and that would advance their career and allow them to build a career over time here. So that was the biggest, you know, result, the biggest con or why people might leave New Hampshire. They also mentioned housing affordability or the lack thereof, that it's New Hampshire is a very expensive place to live, to both rent and buy. They mentioned, you know, really a smattering of other things that I hear about all the time in talking to both young people and, you know, the companies that hire them or want to hire them. They talked about, you know, a lack of public transportation, a lack of childcare, accessibility and affordability, a lack of cultural opportunities, a lack of nightlife and entertainment opportunities. Really, you know, kind of, you know, part and parcel for what we often hear. Of course, you know, there are also reasons that people stay, you know, here in New Hampshire too, and both need to be addressed. You know, yes, we do need to address kind of the shortcomings that we do have, but we also need to protect, you know, our strengths, what we have going for us. And some of those, you know, that people mentioned that, you know, basically everything the outdoors, you know, people love about New Hampshire. Perhaps no surprise. And if you're into the outdoors, you know New Hampshire is the place for you. Lakes, mountains, seacoast, everything in between. You know, they also mentioned, you know, great schools, both K-12 and post-secondary. They mentioned sense of community, you know, and, you know, really the abundance of independently owned stores and restaurants as being things that, you know, kind of make New Hampshire a plus for them.
You don't hear a lot of young people talking about, like, no income tax, no sales tax.
No, not really. You know, and, you know, perhaps more to the point of our conversation today, you know, what you hear them talking about is, you know, they want to live in an interesting place.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that's why you see, I mean, if taxes were all that mattered, you know, Boston and Cambridge and Somerville, those would be ghost towns.
Yeah.
You know, and so would New York and Chicago and all of California, but they're not.
Right.
It's, you know, that's, it's kind of a, it's a cost of doing business. It's, you know, call it a tax for living in an interesting place.
Right.
And it's, you know, that's not the predominant factor in those decisions on where to stay.
At least among young people.
Mm. Did you notice a breakdown on the results of the survey based on the region in New Hampshire?
Yeah, we were thinking specifically about cultural opportunities and whether or not that was more specific to, say, the North Country than the Seacoast.
Correct. We were able to break down the results based on county, you know, here in New Hampshire, which, you know, some of the county, we have big counties here in New Hampshire, and they can kind of span little bits of regions. But yeah, you're what you suspect is correct, that basically the farther south and east one is, you know, the less likely they are to say there are, you know, few cultural opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
The farther north and west one goes, that's when you hear it the most. But still, you know, statewide, and that's, you know, kind of the overall what we're looking at, you know, it's still mentioned, you know, a lack of cultural opportunities, you know, as a reason for potentially leaving the state. So that's of concern to stay, work, play, and one of the things that, you know, we want to focus on and, you know, really highlight, you know, the amenities that we do have and encourage, you know, new ones as well.
Yes, I remember hearing you describe it as a perceived lack of cultural opportunities instead of an actual lack of cultural opportunities. And when I was doing Arts and Culture Day with Leadership Seacoast, just maybe about a month ago, We were in the West End of Portsmouth, and I was blown away by the sheer number of arts and cultural things that are happening in that area. And that was just a teeny tiny portion of one city of a greater region and then a greater state.
It's right. And I think you look around and, you know, some people might say, oh, Portsmouth, the seacoast. Of course, you can't throw a rock without hitting something cool and funky with that, you know, artistic vibe. And perhaps that's true. You know, but, you know, I think that, you know, it's just not apparent, you know, in other parts of the state, but I think it's there. And, you know, maybe not in as high a density as in other places, but it is there. You know, we're in Manchester right now. And, you know, I think, you know, I use the example, you know, there's down in the Mill Yard, you know, once a week, there's, you know, a slam poetry, you know, competition. Now, if you ask most people in Manchester, they would have no idea that's taking place there. Or the fact that we have, I think, you know, half a dozen, like, community theater groups. And, you know, various, you know, chorales and, you know, any other types of, you know, musical ensembles that people can join, you know, artist collectives and, you know, all these little galleries popping up that really kind of fly under the radar. And, you know, I like to say that New Hampshire is a state of best kept secrets. And I think that's absolutely the case. I mean, you get back to the outdoor stuff. Everybody knows we have that. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's hard to miss the White Mountains,
right? It hits you in the face when you drive by.
Yeah. Right. And again, like, if you're into the outdoors, you know this is the place for you. But what if you're not? You know, what if you're into community theater or slam poetry or, you know, dancing or singing into the crowd? We have all of those things here, but I think we just do such a poor job of promoting ourselves and kind of tooting our own horn a little bit. Mm-hmm. And I have some existential theories about why that is, but the fact is that, you know, we all, and when I say we, you know, from the state government, you know, on down to our organizations, to us individually, I think we all need to do a much better job of, you know, kind of tooting our own horn and talking about and celebrating, you know, what we do have. Because if people don't know about it, then that's that perception. They, you know, perception can be reality. And if they think it's not here, then they're apt to move someplace where they think that it is.
We Creative Guts are super happy to do our part helping to promote and raise some awareness for all of these great arts and cultural amenities across the state. We've been primarily in the Seacoast, but Laura and I were just arguing about whether or not Rochester is the seacoast. I say yes, and she says no.
No. What is it?
I don't know, but I think if you have to go 40 minutes to get to the beach, you're not close enough to be in the seacoast. I don't know. I just never really thought of it as part of it, but maybe our listeners, phone in. Let's do a poll.
Yeah, let's do a phone poll.
Geographic debates.
How do you feel about greater seacoast?
I mean, you get warmer, I guess. I don't know.
That's a no. So I personally think that Rochester is like the secret. Nobody knows how much arts and cultural amenities are in Rochester. It is the secret, like, cultural hub of the seacoast. And people often look at Portsmouth and they're like, oh, and yes, there's a huge density of these arts and cultural amenities in Portsmouth, but Rochester has it really, like, going on. And I am super excited to just, like, you know, tell that secret. I'm not a very good secret keeper, apparently.
Well, Sarah, you'll have to let us know. You may have heard that Stay, Work, Play were coming out with these things called Insider's Guides for the state. And this is something that we're doing to really kind of help battle that perception, you know, of New Hampshire as kind of a sleepy, boring place with nothing to do and an uninteresting place, which, again, I think is completely unfair. And so one of the things we're doing is putting together these guides for each region of the state to really share some of those best kept secrets that I mentioned. And I do believe Rochester will be in the Greater Seacoast Guide.
Sorry, Laura.
They're ganging up on me.
I know. If you can make a good argument for the Lakes region, where else would it be? I don't know.
Yeah.
However,
the Greater Seacoast.
Greater Seacoast.
Yeah.
We can compromise on that.
Yes. There's a middle ground I can get on. Yeah.
Sometimes I talk about like Pelham and Nashua, and I'm like, hey, yeah, the greater Seacoast. The Workforce Housing Coalition of the Greater Seacoast has no business being that far west, but we just can't help ourselves.
All roads lead to the Seacoast.
Exactly.
So we're putting together these guides, and you know, really as a tool for employers to use for employee recruitment. Because one of the things we hear is that employers are saying that back 15, 20 years ago, all they had to sell was the company itself and the job. Salary, benefits, company culture, opportunities for advancement, things like that. They said increasingly, and especially with the younger demographic, they're having to sell the region that they're in. And that's not something they're used to doing, to kind of being their own little mini chambers of commerce almost for these, particularly people from away, but even from different parts of the state. So I was out meeting with a company out in the Monadnock region earlier this week, and they were saying, you know, it's a little bit of a tough sell, you know, sometimes just because people think, oh, Monadnock region, there's nothing out there, if they even know where it is to begin with, outside of New Hampshire. So, but there's an incredible wealth of, you know, cool things going on out there. But again, nobody knows about them. So we're putting together these guides, you know, to help them sell the region. So everything from, you know, the cool, interesting stores and restaurants, but also those, you know, great little, you know, whether they're galleries or, you know, community theater, you know, groups that people can get involved in, all these types of things where that they can see, you know, to really make the case and really kind of hit them in the head with it that, you know, there's a wealth, you know, of interesting things here that you can get involved in and, you know, meet other people. That's one of our other goals, is to get people connected to each other to fight kind of the loneliness factor we heard from the survey as well. But really it's, you know, we see it as, you know, helping these companies make a sales pitch for the region that they're in by ultimately showcasing it as a cool, interesting place to live. Because everybody, you know, whether you're young or older, I think nobody wants to live in a boring place. Mm-hmm. You know, you want to, and we may have different opinions on what's interesting, but we all want to live in an interesting place. And so we're helping to use these guides, again, one for each region of the state, to help make that, help them make that case.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Whenever my husband and I travel anywhere, I make a spreadsheet and I research it heavily, and I separate it by cool stuff to do, art galleries, like thrift store shopping, and weird stuff. So I don't know how far along you are on this, but you should have a section of weird. Maybe it's just the artists out there that don't really like it, but
I
like going to odd, you know, places with odd history or sort of a tale that's told, and usually it kind of connects in an inspiration sort of way.
Can you give us an example of something that would be weird?
Like oddity museums, like in Austin. Well, there's the Cathedral of Junk, which is this giant, huge structure of literal junk that's been fashioned into a castle. And you can walk through it and walk on top of it, but it's literally, you know, street signs and canes and CDs and old medical equipment. It's very bizarre. There's a museum of vacuum cleaners. You know, they're just oddball stuff like that.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe that doesn't fit the same category, but it's one of those things my friends and I always kind of we gravitate to, you know, something that's a bit off the beaten path, and, you know, it's kind of fun.
I love weird.
Yeah, no, and, you know, weird is interesting, though. Weird is what makes, you know, a place, and, you know, makes it different than any other place.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, you know, to the extent that we can highlight all of those things, mm-hmm. then yes.
Yeah.
You know, I like to think of one of the little oddities here in Manchester, and we have a lot of them. Over on the west side of Manchester, there's this little dead end street. It's like a block long, and it dead ends into this boxcar that's encased in like a little glass faced, you know, building. And it's called the Merci boxcar. And every state was apparently given one by France back at the end of World War II.
Whoa.
Filled with like little goodies, candies, and stuff like that as a thank you to each of the, at that time, 48 states, you know, for liberating France, you know, during the war. And like all the other boxcars in the country have just been, you know, lost to time. But the one for New Hampshire is sitting in this dead-end little road, you know, on the west side of Manchester.
That is awesome. That's, and we need to go there.
Awesome.
Yeah. I'll give you instructions when we're done.
Okay,
today.
Great. Yeah. And see, it's things like that, I think, that also inspire the writers and the musicians and the painters and everything, because you're, you know, soaking in something out of the ordinary from your own environment, and then it spurs something else.
Yeah, I love that intersection between like art and history too. Like that's a cool like history, and it's a little odd thing to go check out.
Right, and you know, to your earlier point too, you know, I completely agree with like when somebody comes to a new place, and it all depends on what they're into, but you know, I'm a little in your vein, you know, I will seek out those kind of artistic things first.
Mm-hmm.
You know, food and art are like my two big things in a new place.
Yep.
And my girlfriend and I just a few weeks ago went to Chicago, you know, long weekend, Memorial Day weekend, and you know, that was, you know, what we were hitting, you know, the galleries, mm-hmm. and you know, the cool little spots like that. You know, as opposed to maybe some of the more standard, you know, go up into the top of the Sears Tower type of
thing.
Yeah,
yeah. You, a lot of times when you're, some people who are tourists don't want to feel like tourists. They want to feel like explorers, you know. They don't want to go to the common places. And
that's great. So your insider guides double as like promotional for people who are already in New Hampshire and want to discover new things, but also could totally be used by tourists who want to, you know, explore like an insider.
Absolutely.
Very cool.
And how will they be available?
They'll be freely available for download via the Stay Work Play website.
Awesome. That's so great.
And we'll be sharing them with employers in the various regions too, you know, so that they can distribute them directly to those who are there trying to convince to take a job there.
Well, Creative Guts will definitely share it, and REDC will definitely share it. I don't know if you will, but...
Sure. Yeah, why not? The Workforce Housing Coalition can share it.
Yeah.
When the Seacoast Guide is ready, we will
absolutely
definitely let you know. And, you know, we're getting ready to launch the first one for Greater Manchester in July. And then we'll be Greater Concord after that, and then kind of rolling through on a rolling basis.
Nice. Awesome. I'm going to do a plug for Art Up Front Street in Exeter. It's an artist collective. Maybe it's already in there, but if it isn't, it should be.
We will definitely share. Now that I know you're a spreadsheet master, I'll share the spreadsheet that we've gotten started, and you can help us fill in the holes.
I just almost fainted, guys. This is exciting. I love it. Art Up Front Street is a collective of 9 artists, and it's this really cool old building that used to be a teen center that the owners have painted murals on the side of. And you go in there, and there's 9 studios you can walk down the hall and go in and out of. And then there's a big gallery space, and they do open mics and, you know, different community event type stuff. And it's,
that's exactly the kind of stuff we want to have in there. And it's exactly the kind of thing that, you know, I think a lot of people don't know about or don't find out about until you've been in a place for a little while. And part of the challenge, one of the other kind of disturbing things we found in our survey was that, you know, 1/3 of respondents said they were either likely or very likely to leave the state within the next 2 years.
Wow.
So my thing is, if they don't know about this cool stuff, you know, quickly, you know, we stand a good chance of losing them. So we kind of see this as a way to, you know, really, and through the blogging, you know, that we, our bloggers do, thank you, Sarah, for a lot of things that we do to kind of, you know, get people plugged in faster. We don't have time. Like I give the example for here in Manchester, when I moved here like 15 years ago, you know, it took me, I think, probably a good 3 or 4 years before I found out about this place called North End Superette, which is, you know, this dumpy little corner store, you know, bodega, like north of downtown a little bit. I would never go in there, you know, ever.
And always the best places.
Right. And come to find out, it has like the best beer selection in the city.
Exactly.
Who knew? Yeah, finally somebody clued me in, but you know, I wouldn't have stumbled in there on my own for sure.
Yeah.
Unless it was like a million degrees that day and I was just needed a bottle of water or something. But you know, I mean, it's things like that. You know, again, and the key word is insider too, because you know, one of the things we want to do is, you know, make people feel like insiders, and ultimately to make them feel like they belong. So I think that's what makes a place a home. You can work anywhere, you can make friends anywhere, but you'll stay where you feel like this is my home. This is my place. I have my people. And like, I know, where to get the best falafel or the cheapest burrito or who has the best happy hour special or, you know, whatever your thing is. So that's what we kind of the aim of these things, too.
That's awesome.
That's exciting.
As a general rule of thumb, the like dumpiest places, because this is totally true in Dover and Portsmouth, too. The dumpiest places always have the best beer selection. And those are the places that you can build your own six pack, which I personally think is a trend that needs to catch on a lot faster.
Yeah. And be a little bit cheaper. Don't make it like $10 for a
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's be real. So you're a big fan of, you know, when you go places, you know, seeping in this creativity, are you, do you have any creative outlets yourself?
You know, I, right now it's, if you can consider politics and art,
it is an art form, I'd say.
Certainly.
So that's, between this job and I'm an alderman here in the city of Manchester.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Taking up my, a lot of my spare time. I guess if you can consider like creating, you know, organizations too, you know, like bicycle advocacy, you know, stuff that I've done. And, you know, if you can consider that creative, as far as I wish I like, you know, had some visual artistic talent. I wish I could sing. I wish a lot of things. Like, you know, my dad can draw. He's a great woodworker. I inherited none of that. I'm so jealous of people who can. But I appreciate it, for sure.
Yeah, I would certainly argue that, I mean, being a consumer of art, very important in addition to, you know, being an artist. But I would argue crafting policy, totally an art form. Are you involved at all in changing the accessory dwelling unit policy in Manchester?
I am indeed,
yeah,
yes.
That's... Take some creativity.
Right. Some guts, too.
Some guts, too.
Getting past parking minimums. Ah,
yeah.
The bane of all of our existence.
Owner occupancy. Yeah. So the survey specifically asked, it was phrased as cultural opportunities, right? How do you feel like people who responded interpreted that question? How would you have interpreted what cultural opportunities means?
Well, I think the key word you use there is interpret. And we didn't define this for anybody. You know, all the terms that were on there, you know, were, you know, kind of intentionally, you know, broad. So I think, you know, for me, you know, I interpret that as, you know, art galleries, art museums, any type of, you know, performing or visual art, you know, those types of, you know, even cultural places to, you know, meet people who are not like me, kind of those cultural opportunities, which means, you know, other peoples and you know, things like that as well. So I think to me, that's what, how I personally kind of interpreted that.
Yeah, that's great. How do you think you would have interpreted that? I certainly thought about like diversity, but also...
How was it phrased exactly again?
The phrase was, you know, cultural opportunities.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's tough.
Yeah.
Would you leave the state due to a lack of cultural opportunities? Something to that effect.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I would take it as being able to have interactions with people that don't look like me, that don't come from the same background as me, which, you know, in a lot of places there's a huge lack of. So, you know.
Yeah.
If it's mixed in with artistic, you know, then I think I would combine them a bit more. So it would be more theater based or more performance, you know, slam poetry, like that kind of stuff. I would combine them more if that phrase was with it.
Yeah. We talk a lot about like arts and cultural opportunities and like the creative economy. And I don't know. And I asked this question of the director of the New Hampshire Council for the Arts.
Oh yeah. State Council on the Arts.
Thank you. Like, we don't really define, like, what that means, arts and cultural amenities, and what's part of creative economy. So it's kind of a tricky question.
And I think it's to our detriment, too. And maybe it's on purpose. Maybe there's, you know, a benefit there, too. But I think sometimes when we're too broad and too vague, you know, nobody really knows what we're talking about. And, like, they can't grab onto it, and they can't see themselves in it.
Mm.
You know, they might think, well, oh, I'm not an artist. You know, I'm not a graphic designer. I'm not a... you know, an actor. So that's not for me.
Yeah.
Or I have nothing to do with that. So what do I care if there's no funding for arts and culture or the creative economy? I have nothing to do with that. I'm over here making widgets or,
right.
Filling cavities at the dentist office or something.
I think it's also, it just comes down to a lot of people don't realize how much art is surrounding them that they don't realize. I mean, if you look at it graphic design ways, you know, or the voiceovers that you hear, that's done by a voice actor. You know, that was an actor who's actually acting on the, you know, when you hear a commercial on the radio or when you see street signs, someone designed it so that font made the most sense to be the most readable from this distance. You know, there's a lot of people that, you know, creativity is about, you know, inspiring, but it's also about solving problems and figuring out solutions. So it's everywhere in ways you wouldn't imagine. And I wish, you know, that could be seen more.
Yeah, that's so true during election season, too. As Laura and I talked about when I was considering running for office and her, like, very elaborate, like, designing of my, like, political signs.
Next time.
There's a strategy there.
Yeah.
We talked about what colors I would use.
Yeah.
It's all part of branding and everything else. And, yeah, I've heard people refer to, like, my signs, you know, oh, that's Will Stewart Blue.
Your
kind of bright blue color,
which is the most common favorite color.
Yeah,
so blue is a good way to go.
Will Stewart blue. That's my favorite.
Yeah,
color.
Exactly. Yeah. Me too.
Yeah. It's a more fun, energetic, youthful, progressive shade of blue.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
I wanted to do teal and purple, just in case anybody was wondering,
to really stand out.
Very like I wanted to make it clear that I was a female, and that like I was going to be like a, you know, a bad feminist. So we really started to talk about this already, but can you sort of describe what you think the value is of arts and culture to the community, to the economy, to people, to whatever it's important to?
I think it's important and to everything, to the economy, to our communities, you know, to the state as a whole, and, you know, writ large, however far you'd like to go out from there. You know, as I mentioned earlier, I think everybody wants to live in an interesting place. And, you know, the arts are what makes things interesting. You know, my girlfriend actually runs an independent theater here in the state in Concord.
Cool.
And, you know, she likes to, you know, she always has to go out and, you know, raise money, as we all do in nonprofits. And she uses a line, which I've since stolen, you know, basically saying that, you know, her theater is kind of, you know, it is a proof of life, you know, for a community. And it's saying that, you know, for me, you know, like, yeah, I like going to the movies. You know, I'm not a big fan of the symphony, but you know what? I like that we have one here. Mm-hmm. You know, that, again, that's one of those kind of indicators that a place is interesting and will attract attract interesting people, you know, too. And so, you know, for that reason alone, you know, I think it's critical to the economy and to our communities. You know, over and above that, you know, there's the direct, you know, kind of financial benefit that you see there through payroll and, you know, all of the money that flows through, you know, the creation of all of these various things and the organizations that support them.
As someone who's responsible for a lot of fundraising, I'm definitely going to steal proof of life.
She'll be glad to know that it's taking on a life of its own.
We're going to have to interview her, too.
She would be a good one.
Great. That's great.
She's going on the list.
Yep. All right. We have a very long list.
Yeah. We have a huge list.
Which just speaks to how, you know, yeah, how extensive the arts community is here
yeah,
in New Hampshire, right?
Yeah. And someone said to me, are you going to run out of people or how do you find people? And I'm like, well,
no.
We each know so many people and then they each know so many people. You know, it's like the 7 steps to Kevin Bacon. Like, it's just going to be endless.
Yeah.
Yeah. You should ask everybody you talk to. Who else should we be interviewing?
Maybe we can get Kevin Bacon.
He would have some great recommendations, right? Too.
His contact list would be awesome.
I just tweeted at him. I don't even know if Kevin Bacon's on Twitter.
I don't know.
But yes, that was a very good suggestion. Aside from Kevin Bacon, we should ask everybody to give us, you know, a name, mm-hmm, two names, whatever. Yeah, we're definitely not going to run out. And we really, when we were putting together our list, we wanted to make sure that we were doing it in a way that was broad and had a lot of variety. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we interviewed a painter and then we were like, all right, now let's interview a chef. And, you know, now
we
let's
did an
interview
actress.
An actress. Mm-hmm. And, yep. So lots of variety in those, yeah, different creative things.
And it's not exclusive to New Hampshire, though it primarily will be because those are the folks we know right now. But especially with this, we can take calls this way, so we could interview someone from anywhere, really. So,
oh, very cool.
Yeah, yeah.
So, if you all haven't picked up yet, Will is not from New Hampshire. And I always forget, and then I hear your accent and think, oh, yeah, that is not a New Hampshire accent. So, how did you come to stay, work, and play in New Hampshire?
As I mentioned, it's been 15 years that I've been up here.
Wow.
I know. It was, like many of us, a job, you know, brought me here. I used to be in journalism and was writing for a paper down in Tennessee.
That's a very creative job.
I suppose so.
Yeah.
But I was, again, as a little aside, like, I'm always jealous of people who write fiction. Like, I have a good friend. I'm going to go hang out with him tonight. You know, he writes fiction, like short stories and like novels and stuff. And we were both in journalism at one time. And I think that's, you know, it's a stereotype. Every journalist has like the dream to write the great American novel. Like, I never had that dream. Because, like, you know, just the idea of, like, coming up with inventing something out of my head. Like, I can go to a meeting and report it and give context and get my quotes, but it's all, like, real stuff. Mm. So I'm totally jealous of people who can do that.
My husband's a novelist, so I can relate. I don't understand his process at all.
Yeah, I wish I could. I just got through reading A Gentleman in Moscow. And, I mean, a phenomenal novel. And I'm just in awe of people who can do that. And, but that is not me.
Yeah.
So, yeah, perhaps there was some, you know, creativity in how I presented the facts. And, you know, I like to think I can, you know, write a good sentence here and there. But, yeah, nothing in the fiction realm.
Yeah.
So it was journalism that brought me, you know, to New Hampshire and ended up taking a job at the Hippo, an alt weekly paper.
Wow. That's awesome.
That's a great paper.
Here in Manchester. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Was there for a couple of years and then kind of felt the need to. I was writing a lot about housing affordability, actually. You know, having moved up from Tennessee.
Sarah just passed out.
No, that kind of put me on my trajectory. And, you know, because my own personal rent, I went from renting, again, in a smaller community, granted. I remember this was 2004. I was renting a 2-bedroom apartment, everything included, electricity, everything included for $450 a month. And then I moved up here. I got a 1-bedroom on the west side of Manchester, heat and hot water included, no electricity, $825 a month.
Yep. That now, sounds right.
My salary, that was nearly a double, you know, doubling. You know, my salary did not, it went up some, but not nearly.
Didn't double with your rent.
Correct. So I found myself writing a lot about things like that and condo conversions at the time. This is when the market was really taking off, you know, 2005, 2006-ish. And that led me to go over to a group called NeighborWorks, where I did housing issues. It's true.
How have we never talked about this?
I know. I was there for like 5 years. I was a community organizer, here in the city. Yep. And then, kind of got into economic development work and worked for the Manchester Chamber as their VP of Economic Development, and then took over the Chamber in Derry, Londonderry, and then here to Stay, Work, Play.
Tell us some of your favorite spots for arts and culture in New Hampshire.
There are a lot.
There are a lot.
I would say, first and foremost, it would be political malpractice if I did not say that my favorite arts and culture place in New Hampshire is the Currier Museum of Art, located in Ward 2 of Manchester, which I coincidentally happen to represent on the Manchester Board of Mayor and Alderman.
And that's not even just lip service, because that happens to be a fantastic
It's a wonderful place, yeah.
The Blue Tree thing, like, that was just wicked cool.
Mm. Yeah. No, it is. It is a phenomenal place. I would also say Kelly Stelling, a new gallery, just actually a couple buildings down from here, contemporary gallery. It's really good. They have a great thing right now of an exhibit from James Aponovich, a great New Hampshire artist going on right now. There's the Arg Gallery, one of the other new galleries on Chestnut Street, just about two blocks from here. I was up in the Upper Valley a few weeks ago, and I was blown away by the Hood Museum on the campus of Dartmouth College. Never heard of it to begin with. And then I guess they underwent this like extensive renovation and just reopened back in January. I mean, just incredible. Incredible. If you haven't been, by all means, go. While we were up there, we also hit the AVA Gallery in Lebanon, which was pretty cool, too. Again, all these things, you're kind of flying, at least for me, and again, I'm not immersed in the arts world, so maybe it's well-known in the arts world, but for me, and I think I would kind of represent, at least in this, average New Hampshire person, who's not totally immersed in arts, but I didn't even know it was there. And then you go, and it's just, you're like, where did this come from?
Yeah.
And it's just awesome. So, those are some of the places that really kind of come front to mind. I'm also a big fan. These aren't like actual venues, but like you mentioned, murals mm-hmm. earlier. Like, I love murals and street art. And like Nashua, I know, has like tons of great murals. We're beginning to get a few here in Manchester. So I like seeing those things pop up and kind of the creativity there as well.
That's always what I take away. So I love street art. I think every place mm-hmm. should just have tons of public art. And anytime I travel outside of the United States, I always think to myself, like, why do they have so much more street art than we do? And I hope that that's something that grows.
So when we end the podcast each time, we count to three and then we all say at the same time, show us your creative guts. So we're going to do that now as soon as this motorcycle passes. Okay.
Show us your creative guts.
Thank you so much, Will. It was so fun to talk to you. And I'm so happy to hear about all the great things Stay, Work, Play is doing. So kudos for the awesomeness that they are putting into our state.
If you want to learn more about Stay, Work, Play, you can find them on the web, stayworkplay.org, and on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter.
And as always, Creative Guts is available on all major podcast platforms and even some of the little ones. So go out there and find us. And obviously, follow us on Facebook if you aren't yet, because you will get lots of behind the scenes sneak peeks. And thanks again for your support, for listening, and go out there and be creative, folks.
And my mom can personally listen and be like, Laura, what are you doing? Swearing? Don't do that. That's not her voice. I don't know why I did that. Now she's going to get mad that I did a bad impression.
I don't know if my mom knows how to podcast.
My mom doesn't yet, but she will.
I don't know if she'll listen to this, because I don't know if she'll be able to figure it out.
Hi, Sarah's mom.
Hi,
maybe.
Sarah's mom.
Well, she'll figure it out if she knows her baby is putting something out there.
Making fun of her on the air.
Can edit that out in post, don't worry.
Yes. Yeah, I do a lot of editing. Sometimes we go off on tangents, and that's just what happens.
Sometimes we're in the car on the way back, and I'm like, hey, I said something stupid. Can you cut that?
Yeah.
Laura has too much control, because she does all the editing.
Yeah.
That's the real power.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I know.